Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to the Primetime with Isaac and Souk. I'm Isaac, the cool one.
What? This is our podcast.
Yeah. Welcome to our podcast.
I don't know. It's brought to you by Les Schwab, though.
Yeah.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
The following show may contain adult themes not suitable for children.
Shut the hell up.
Club 1080 with Isaac and Souk.
It does go well with a chicken.
How and why are you drunk at 6 o'clock?
Well, the how's pretty self-explanatory, and the why is because I thought we were leaving at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Ergo, Latin, plenty of time to sleep it off.
At the club, Club 1080, the hottest spot north of Milwaukee. At the club, Club 1080, Souk and Rob's passion are always the fashion at the club. They fell in love.
Swag refuses to play fart drops, so I'll do it. By the way, Swigard, your deafening silence on Cougs in the NFL was not only bizarre, it was telling.
Sorry.
So after my...
I went Souk there for a moment, didn't I? Just throwing something out there.
After my research...
There's seven current Cougs in the NFL.
Yeah, there are guys in the NFL. I mean, you have Luani, Joe Dahl, Vince Mail, Xavier Cooper, Deion Buchanan. There may be a couple of others, but from 2010 to 2017, the only other guys would be Zach Williams and Marcus Wilson. Mm. I mean, there's not a lot of guys.
No, my memory was back in the Drew Bledsoe era.
Well, they've had some high profile, you know, I mean, Bledsoe and Leaf and
Rippin
and such. But you look at Oregon State.
Yeah.
Man. Dude, they're putting...
Riley consistently put guys in until the last couple of years.
He did. He consistently put three or four and as many as seven in 1 year. 2009, they had seven guys. Levitre, Keenan Lewis, Victor Butler, Slade Norris, Brandon Hughes, Al Afalava, Sammy Strotter. I mean, Oregon State, 2015, Sean Mannion, Steven Nelson, DJ Alexander... Obum Guachem, Ryan Murphy. I mean, Oregon State's putting guys in the NFL. So you have officially
three
been.
Of those guys are still in. I don't know if Obum Guachem's still playing.
I don't either.
But
you've been officially shot down on that.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's all right.
That's fine.
It was a nice try.
Long day.
Long day. Today is what some call Blackout Wednesday.
It will be for Dirt. Dirt says it's the best drinking holiday of them all.
Now, why does he say that?
It
is a popular drinking holiday.
I think from his standpoint, and he may, as he gets older, if his relationship continues to blossom.
Does he have a girlfriend?
He has a main squeeze.
What's his name?
Steve. But currently, he doesn't, you know, there's nothing, everything's, you know, off on Thursday. He doesn't have to prepare a big meal. He's going over to the parental unit. So
he just gets wasted like he's in college.
Yeah, just in college. And you see your old friends a lot of times that come back.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, okay, so I did a little homework on this. Now, is it the biggest drinking day of the year? Not necessarily.
I still would argue New Year's Eve is.
Yeah, well, it depends on how you're defining it. According to my beer sources.
Oh, 4th of July's got to be the biggest beer holiday.
Who were in attendance last night at the Civil War Mixer. It is the biggest drinking day of the year if you're talking about measuring by volume of consumption in bars and restaurants. People are going out.
Yeah, because
like
they're eating at
said.
Home.
That's right.
The next day.
Yes.
So
everybody's out. Everybody's back in town. and they go out, and the bars become the place to meet up for a little community and a little imbibing before all hunkering down with various families in the house for several days, right? So that's where we're at. So consumption out and about, according to a small business consulting firm whose name I can't pronounce, this day, this Wednesday before Thanksgiving, accounts for 167% of a normal bar restaurant's daily revenue. So it is significant.
So you used to sling them drinks.
Yes. Well, see, now I'm opposite. As an ex-bartender, this is the bartender in me. I never liked...
Was this a good day to work? Because
it's a great day because
for the money?
Yeah, you make a ton of money.
Was it worth all of the extra nonsense?
It's always worth it because you make a ton of money. But it's an S show, and it's insane. Like, as a bartender, you want nothing more than your head just buried in the ice all night. Like, you're just going, and you're making money hand over fist. So you'd never turn that down. You always wanted to work those shifts.
But there's usually extra nonsense as compared to just a busy night.
I don't know about like tonight. I think everybody's pretty jovial. They're with family.
I think compared to St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, St. Patrick's Day is the worst day because you get amateurs who get off. You know, they're out at 9 a.m. and drinking, and it's horrible. But I never like going out on any of these nights because as an ex-bartender, I just know it's amateur hour. But this one, you know, this one's a little different. Family and everything.
Yeah. I think people are fairly – it's more about seeing old friends, old family you haven't seen for a while. So most people are just generally wanting to catch up, conversation.
Yeah. And I don't think you get too
– No, it gets louder as the night goes on. But
well, that's any bar.
But there's nothing rowdy.
This also has to be, I'm sure that
you also don't have a lot of live music and dancing and that sort of nonsense either.
I think this is probably the biggest Lyft or Uber night.
I would think so. Plus, you got a lot of people that are not at home, people in different towns.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Well, so if you judge it by volume of booze consumed at bars and restaurants, this is the biggest drinking day. However, my sources tell me that the overall biggest drinking day is actually Super Bowl Sunday.
Ooh.
When you're talking about sales, you're talking about people buying, people not only in bars and restaurants,
product,
but also
going out the door.
Yes.
Bigger than the 4th of July weekend?
That's what they say. Super Bowl Sunday has become enormous, and I think it's even in our lifetimes, Jason, become much bigger than it used to be.
Yes.
Because, you know, the ladies are into it now, you know?
Well, I guess, no, but my mom was always into it when growing up. We never had Super Bowl parties where it was like all the dudes out watching it and all the ladies mingling in the other room.
Now for some real talk. How much are you going to drink tonight? Well, you got to work tomorrow.
No, I got to put some charts together. I still have work to do, so I will have I will enjoy some brown water there as I'm preparing. But
atta boy, I'm going to rattle some ice.
I will rattle some ice.
Good for you. As you should.
But yeah, I still have to I got to make an appetizer too since I'm not available to cook my usual stuffing. My stuffing has been deemed the holiday stuffing for whatever function we are going to.
Really?
Yeah.
I love stuffing. Stuffing's my favorite side.
Yep. Oh, by far.
I put a little hot sauce on it.
You got to put sausage in it. Sausage is the key. Oh,
so much yes. I will probably pop some wine tonight. Pop some red wine. Maybe a few more tomorrow. But and this will sound funny to non-drinkers or maybe non-wine drinkers, but drinking a bottle of wine by oneself is really nothing.
Nope. Go through it pretty quick.
Yes, you do.
Goes down smooth, especially good wine.
Yeah, it's glorious as a wine drinker, kind of the evolution of understanding that one bottle to yourself is perfectly normal, and as a matter of fact, it's really not that big of a deal. Like the first stage of when you first start drinking wine, because I really like red wine. When I'm at home, I don't drink beer. I'll drink beer out, but at home, I'm usually red wine. Or if I'm feeling frisky, I'll dip into the scotch. Rattle some ice. But it's fun. Like, the first stage when you start drinking a lot of wine is that you are shocked at how fast you can drink a bottle on your own. And you have to work with this. This takes time. And you're like, whoa, that's, you know, what's wrong with me? The second stage is the guilt that you are able to drink a bottle of wine so easily to yourself that fast. The third stage is realizing from other wine drinkers that they do the exact same thing. And then the fourth stage is group acceptance and validation that it is perfectly normal and not that bad, and everybody who drinks wine does it. That's the truth about being a wine drinker. So when you hear somebody, like a perfect tell of how somebody, they don't drink much wine, when they think it's insane that you drank a bottle of wine on your own. It's not insane at all.
No.
It happens quite frequently.
I got to take you and Nurse Nice out to there's a couple of wineries that I've come to know them going with my parents over the years. You would love Felix out in Carlton, Oregon.
I've not been there.
At Carlo and Julian.
Okay. Well, let's go.
We got to do that.
Sign me up.
Yep.
Now, does this mean I have to hang out with you all day?
Not all day. You're going to be drinking wine.
Now, here's my thing about wine tasting, and I love being so close to wine country. It's amazing here. But I think less is more when I go wine tasting, because I'll start touring these wineries.
You want to go?
By the third one, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't taste anything. And I get drunk and stuff. You know, I like two. One, little pre-funk. Yeah. Some tastings. The second one, get a bottle.
You want to end up at Felix, because Felix will start pulling stuff out of every. He opens everything, so and he'll
that
grow.
Gets dangerous.
Yeah, and he'll try and grow any kind of grape. It's not just Pinots, or it's not just one thing. He's pretty adventurous.
You know
it's
what?
Pretty cool.
Swigard, the wine industry. I was talking to the guy from Naked Winery last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wine industry's got to get less snobby. You know?
Yeah.
That really holds it back. Because
Felix is great.
Yeah,
he'll just sit there and talk to you.
There's a lot of guys that aren't, but you know, you get out to wine country, it gets a little uppity.
We'll get you out to see Felix. Felix is your kind of dude.
I think they got to tone that down.
Well, there's a lot of California money from Napa coming up now and buying everything up.
I know. Yeah, you read the stories about some of the winemakers up there. I get stupid jealous. What a dream come true. Have a bunch of money. Hey, you know what? Let's buy just a bunch of land in Oregon and grow grapes. Get drunk. Swag just gave me the universal sign for break. Therefore, we must break. Blazers are getting their ass kicked. What's that all about?
Don't mess with the process.
Now, why do you say that? What does that mean?
What? The process? The Sixers.
Like the years of the
Yeah, they're sticking all to the... they're tanking, sticking to it. Trust the process.
All
right. And it's working now. They're all healthy, finally.
All right. Coming up next... let's get to this Cheesecake Factory bit. Now, I told you when we played Mike Leach earlier on his wedding advice, that was one of the most accurate things I've seen in a long time. So is this. It is the world's most amazing and accurate restaurant review. And I'll read it to you next. It's 6:13 on The Fan. All right, welcome back. Souk Sick. Mike is over in New Jersey, I think, or something. Swigard is here. He was diligently preparing for his call of the biggest upset of the college basketball season tomorrow at the Moda Center.
Look, second-ranked Arizona just lost in a tournament.
To who?
NC State.
Oh, well, that's not as big of an upset as what you're about to call.
Just trying to, you know, feel the
it's
feel
happening.
The karma.
The big boys are going down. North Carolina.
Time, holiday time. Wonder if they're, you know, they're on the other coast.
Right. You
Where's
know what?
Their attention at?
I've watched Roy Williams' teams for years. They're soft. They're cookie dough soft. Punch them in the gut. I'm telling you, it works. So UP plays North Carolina tomorrow, and Swag will be on the call. And it will be over on AM 910. Sports ESPN.
Yes, 11 a.m. pregame, 11:30 tip.
What do we call that station now?
910 ESPN Portland.
Boom. Hey, so do you like Twitter, Swigard?
I have been known to tweet.
I like Twitter. Twitter's fun. Although the some bros were telling me the other day, I went and recorded a Blazers podcast with some guys, and they were saying Snapchat's where it's at, man. The Snap. You got to be on Snap or Instagram. It's Twitter's last place of the social medias. That's what the kids say.
Yeah, I would think my son would agree. What's old Meatball? What's he?
I think they're all Snapchat and Instagram.
Snapchat and Instagram, yeah.
It's all about Snap. I don't. You think it's because you can send the, DPs and they go away?
Well, they're very visual. They're not into the substance of, clicking on something and delving into something.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like clicking on a link, as Twitter will sometimes require you to do. That's right. Yeah, Twitter's more of a news feed. It's for olds.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it.
I like it. Well, you can take it and leave it. You can scan through stuff.
That's right. And you don't have to participate in a lot of it.
No.
It can get a little douchey. But then again, what can't?
Yeah, you can stay out of the fray.
Yeah. So I found this on Twitter, and every once in a while it just gives you a little piece of gold, and this was wonderful. So you know the deal with restaurants, Swigard, you're a restaurant guy. You've worked in restaurants, for example, the Carl's Juniors and the McDonald's, and Wendy's and Burger King and In-N-Out, they all have the same kind of color schemes.
Yeah,
red, yellow. You know why that is?
That I don't.
Well, basically in restaurants,
ketchup mustard. Is that what it's supposed to be, remind you of?
No, it's those color red and yellow colors in logos are intentional because they're to encourage happiness and energy and hunger. That's what they do. It's proven. So that's why they all have kind of the same color schemes. It's also subtly telling customers to get in and get out fast. That's kind of the idea behind. So there's point being, there's science and thought behind every single thing that you see in a restaurant. Like some restaurants have, I read this the other day, I forget what restaurant it was, but they were talking about how you have to have different table shapes and different table sizes, a variety, so that people don't get bored with the same look. And tables should be wider more than they should be deep. And they monitor noise. It can't be too loud, can't be too soft. They pick the music very carefully. The way they do lighting is a huge thing. Lighting has to make people feel attractive, and if it does, then they love going there. They don't even know why. This is my favorite restaurant. Why? Well, you don't even know it, but it makes you look good. And when you go into the bathroom, that's why you like it. So they study all this stuff. And a lot of times what happens with it, when you make a decision to go back to a restaurant, you are doing that based on not necessarily the food or the service or any other element other than the feeling that it gave you. It's all about a feeling.
Mm.
And that is all encompassing. That's the music, the service, the food, the everything. Because you'll hear, it's like you'll talk about steakhouses in town and people will prefer Ringside because Ringside has a feel. Is it the best steak in town? I don't think it is. However, it's got a good steak, great food, but also it's, more the ambiance and what they've done there and kind of the story and the
feel. It's an experience.
That's right. And so, hell, cutting-edge restaurants now are starting to look at, they're starting to make profiles of you. Like, do you sit at the bar? Do you drink? What do you like to drink? What don't you drink? Do you like window seats? Do you like, will you ever sit with your back to the door? Do you like male or female servers? Do you want more time to eat than the normal table? They're starting to do all this. I mean, it's crazy, the science they put into it. Well, I found something real fun on Twitter. How many times have you eaten at the Cheesecake Factory?
Oh, every once in a while.
I mean, everybody's
eating. It's one of those things, you go, mom says, hey, we got to go shopping for something.
Yeah, you're in the mall.
You're in the mall. Here we go.
We'll just eat there.
Take you to Cheesecake Factory because there's one of everything on the menu.
Right. Well, I had never thought about this before, but you talk about all the science that goes into restaurants and why things are the way they are. Have you ever thought about what the hell the Cheesecake Factory is with its decor and its menu and all the crap that goes on in a Cheesecake Factory? Well, somebody, this guy, okay, so this Twitter handle is Max Sledroom, Max Krieger VG. I don't know who it is. But I saw it on social media and I loved it. And he wrote a review of the Cheesecake Factory, and it cannot be more accurate. He writes, if you want a fully immersive postmodern design hellscape themed dining experience, I highly recommend dinner at the Cheesecake Factory. From a design perspective, that place is effing wild, and I'll talk a little bit about why. So the Cheesecake Factory essentially grew out of a Los Angeles bakery business. Then in 1992, they brought on hospitality designer Rick McCormick, and stuff went off the rails. We're talking Victorian, Egyptian, Rococo off the rails. I mean, check out this exterior, and he posts a picture. Greco-Roman cornices, seashells above the pseudo-arched doors, topped with a dome airlifted from effing St. Basil's. The interior is a world of aesthetic chaos that feels like a mix between a Fry's Electronics, an overgrown Panera, and a laser tag arena. It is sensational. And that is so true. Have you ever looked around in a Cheesecake Factory?
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
What the hell are they doing? Then he says, palm trees sit aside 2,000s chic glass lighting fixtures, French limestone floors, mosaics, fresco-like murals, pseudo-Egyptian faces top columns with hybrid palm frond lotus blossom designs and pseudo-hieroglyphics. It's unchecked white exoticism, orientalism run amok with a huge budget. Some elements, like the face's third eye and the Sauron-like sconces, borderline on a cult flavor. TCF, the Cheesecake Factory, blasts you with a luxury dining aesthetic while cutting some bizarre corners. They serve you water in tankards, seat you in wicker chairs at marble tabletops. What? Then you realize your tankards are plastic, your wicker is plastic, and your table is vinyl-lined particle board. Both ostentatiously gaudy and consistently cheap, from the fake plaster walls to the fake wicker chairs, the Cheesecake Factory is almost reminiscent of a theme park. The more you stare at this and see elements like the tacky booth cushions and glass dividers slowly emerge, the more surreal it gets. The unchecked, frenetic design doesn't stop there. Look at the damn menu. Or should I say four menus? Menu, skinny-licious, drinks, cheesecakes, not desserts. Those are different. It is the most intentionally obtuse culinary document I've ever seen. It wants to disorient you. Quick bites, appetizers, glam burgers, specialties, pastas, sandwiches, steaks, chops, fish, seafood, pizza, superfoods, skinny-licious. These are all separate sections of the Cheesecake Factory menu. There is no rhyme or reason to them. This menu is not your friend. It is actively trying to mislead you. That's right. I said glam burger. Mid-menu advertisements for the restaurant you have already chosen to dine at are frequent and deliberately make you lose track of your spot. Here's one with an entire page of flavor text. This thing feels like a damn playbill. All the Cheesecake Factory's a stage, and we are but its players. After wandering the menu a while helplessly, you order, and the food arrives. It's good. Not bad, not great, but good. Better than Applebee's, better than a Friday's. I wanted to say I hated it, but in truth, I couldn't. That was probably the most disappointing part of all. And how true is that? After all this, you don't understand what the hell's going on. You finally figure out what to eat. You're confused. You get it. And you're like, you know what? All right. It's not bad.
Yeah. I've had worse.
And then, at the end of it all, in a cold, lonely counter cooler, the cheesecake. My location placed it near the lobby slash exit, far from the dining area, alone. The namesake dish feels utterly inconsequential by the time you reach it. Perhaps it's meant something once. To conclude, there is nothing more quintessentially American capitalism in flavor than the Cheesecake Factory. Wealth run wild, chaotic visual fantasies realized with no aesthetic discipline, an obsession with appearance of luxury, gross excess that excels at feigning its quality. It feels like a relic of another era, one where such a vision was sold to the American public as a utopian concept. It, like the brief period of neoliberalistic prosperity that made it possible, is a fever dream made manifest. Enjoy it while you can. Is that not the greatest Cheesecake Factory review of all time?
That's pretty well done right there.
And
not going to lie.
Perfectly, perfectly accurate.
Yeah.
Now, does that make you want to eat at a Cheesecake Factory? The answer is no.
No.
Because you never want to eat at a Cheesecake Factory.
It's just there when you're hungry.
There. Trying to confuse you. All right. Coming up next, Jason, I have a few leftover stories from the week, since it's technically a Friday. We have a horse that's been thrown in jail. And I have a Charles Manson question for you. I was going to pose this to Suka. I'll pose it to you. You being the sportser and the Blazer fanatic that you are.
That's right.
Did they win, by the way?
No, 101-81. We'll have more on that here in a moment.
All right. It's nice to have Swigard back on the board. Tight ship you run over here. Swag.
Do what I can.
You know, you and I go way back, don't we?
Go back to the days. I still remember our first Baseball Today show.
Yeah, we used to do that show.
You remember the first one?
I do remember the first one.
Okay, Mariners went 14 innings.
Yeah,
we went on it like 1:15 in the morning.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
But you know what? Damn it. We would have waited till 5 in the morning.
We were so stoked for that. That was the best time.
When I was, that was what, probably 2001, 2002?
It was 3 or 4.
Was it that late?
Yeah, I was here. I got hired in 2002.
Okay.
And I was doing everything.
Well, I went to the boss here. Oh, look at you. Doing everything.
Well, just, you know, I was out throwing t-shirts to the crowd at promotions and...
You were Mr. Fan.
Anything I could do to
You know
get
what,
in
Swigard?
Here.
You still are. 20 years later, or however long it is,
15,
you're
15,
still
16.
Mr. Yeah. Fan.
Yep.
I mean, if you had to name one guy that was the fan, it's you. You're amazing. I mean, sort of. So I went to the boss when I was, one of the hard parts about being in radio, it's like, you don't really, there's not a lot of breaks. Like you gotta find an opening. You gotta find a crack in the door
and then
power through it.
Yeah. And then stuff spins around on you.
It can.
Yeah. Because you were kind of stepped into Colin there as his update guy.
Well, that was later though.
Oh, that was...
Yeah, that was after. Yeah. So, look, I was an intern here, and then I put a tape on old Alan Davis's desk. He was the program director at the time. He's now up in Buffalo. And I put a tape. I said, hey, I just wanted to know if you'd talk to me about, how I'm doing and this and that. And he was like, Isaac, you start Saturday. And then I was like, what the hell? What? And then he would walk out of the office. Like, he didn't want to talk to... Like,
yeah.
Anytime you asked him for advice, he would get up and leave the office like he had somewhere to go. Even though he didn't. He would just walk around the building so that you left his office. And he was like, Isaac, you start Saturday. I'm like, well, okay. So I started as an update. He threw me on Saturday. He liked what he heard. He's like, fine. He wouldn't give me any pointers or anything. He was just like, yeah, just go on Saturday. Just show up.
Go up. Just don't mess it up.
Don't. His classic line was...
Don't F up, Isaac.
So he threw me on. Well, then I went to him. I said, hey, what about this? What about this idea? You know, we had the Mariners games, and you're looking to grow. Because, see, at this time in the radio landscape, you know, you got to remember, the market tanked. People were getting fired right and left. And there's a lot of big money guys, a lot of dead weight. They were looking for young guys like you and I.
And we also had a lot of, because I came, I don't know, it was about a year and a half after you. You'd been here a little while.
Yeah, the payroll was hefty.
And there was a ton of part-time guys.
Yeah, there were a lot of full-time guys, too. A lot of hosts.
Yeah, a lot of hosts. And then there were a lot of weekend guys. And when we first started doing the high school football scoreboard show, there was like 12 of us. And Alan was like, I got to pare this down.
Yeah, he had to do a lot of firing.
And so the way he did that with all of us that were in here was, it was interesting that when they got to host, we didn't actually do games then. It was a scoreboard Friday night show. So there was like two or three people hosting, and we had two or three guys out at games, and then somebody was producing. And when it came around to producing, suddenly, conveniently, guys were sick or their mom was in town or something like that. And the next year, everybody that spent their shift as a producer was still involved in the show, and everybody else was gone.
Yeah. He was my favorite, I'll finish my story in a second, but my favorite Alan Davis story, when he first got here, there was a host here who was from Baltimore, and I won't say his name, but Alan hired him. Alan brought him in for the afternoon show, I think. I don't know. There has been so many different shows, but Alan was making some moves. And he brought this guy in, and at that time we did Blazers pre- and post-game shows.
Oh, yes.
And if the pregame show, like tonight, they played at 4, so the pregame show would have been at 3. So if you were on the afternoon show, you would do the pregame show. And he said, Alan Davis walked into that studio where you are sitting, and the host from Baltimore was in there. I was in there. I think Adam Grimes at the time was a producer who's still a football coach here in the area and still around. Good dude. He was in there. There was a couple of other people powwowing. And Alan came in and said, I need somebody to do the post-game show. Trailblazers. And, of course, I would have jumped at it, but they weren't going to put me on the air. I was just a young whippersnapper at that time. And this guy from Baltimore said, that's not in my contract. Well, we thought nothing of it. Alan walked out of the room, came into work the next day. Guy from Baltimore, fired.
Gone.
And that was within 3 weeks after him moving his entire... Yeah. I think at the time he was married or had a girlfriend. They moved out here from Baltimore for this job, turfed him, because he wouldn't do the Blazers postgame show. And that was a sign that, things have changed in radio a little bit. So guys like you and I were coveted because we were cheap.
We were cheap.
And we were willing.
Willing.
So I went to him and I said, hey, let's do a... I love baseball. Swigard loves baseball. Baseball's my... That's my...
Yep, that's your sport.
Let's do a Mariners post-game show.
Post-game, yeah.
Swigard be in there producing it. I'll host it. We'll do a scoreboard-type fun show. And give me some reps. You want young guys who want...
Yeah, and reps. I got reps producing. I got reps doing updates.
And he
and
was
it was
like,
a chance. He's like, you're... Yeah. Because I had worked in the business world for 7 to 10 years before. I was not fresh out of college. And so he's like, you're smart, you're intelligent. You just need to learn how radio works. You need to get your hands-on experience.
I am old.
Not dying today. So, yeah, and he said, go nuts. And he just turned us loose.
And he let us do it because he didn't like what the Mariners were running on their network post-game.
No,
he's like,
the minute Niehaus was done, he's like, the minute they're done, you guys
go. And so the first night, we're just so fired up. We're like, yes, he let us do it. And the Mariners went 14 innings, and we didn't crack the mics till I thought it was like midnight.
Nah,
but you said
I think
one
it was
morning.
Like 1:15. I remember we were sitting there because it went to 10 or 11. We're like, okay, it's a little late, whatever. And then it got to the 12th, and we're like, well, what do we do? We're like, well, who do we call? Nobody's up. here we go. And we got callers, too.
We did. You know, people loved that show. I'm not saying that just because it was, I assumed that nobody would listen, and it was just an exercise in you and I trying to get better. It was not. People listened to it. And that's when I learned that, oh, wow, even though Portland doesn't have baseball, there are a lot of baseball fans.
And the other thing I learned doing that is you can't fake it. If you have genuine enthusiasm for whatever you're going to come on the air and do, and I learned that even more as I got more involved with the high school football stuff, the people that do tune in really do appreciate it. You can't fake it.
Yeah, we were fired up.
You just can't fake it.
We loved it. I put in so much work. You should talk to my wife sometime about about those times when I was prepping for that, like watching the Mariners game and prepping for that show.
That was when they first had, you could first get the, an MLB audio pass or something. So I remember we spent, they popped for like $39.95 for us or something so I could get all the audio clips.
It was an embarrassment of riches.
But sure enough, we had audio clips from every single game in the major leagues that night.
Yeah, we went through the scoreboard. I had all my nuggets and notes and different stats. And, man, that was fun. In some ways, and I love doing radio. I've loved radio ever since the day I stepped foot in radio. That is, to some extent, not every extent, but to some extent, my favorite time in radio was that first show. So fun.
It was a blast.
Just baseball. Now I can take it or leave it.
You've got to deal with Sook for how many years?
I'm old. It's a 4-hour show. It's like, it's a lot of work.
Well, now the second revelation was when we convinced everybody to do the club. Because if you had to do 4 hours of sports every day for as long as you guys have been doing it.
The club has really saved us.
Yeah.
You're right about that. If we couldn't do this, I don't know what would have happened to us by now. God bless the club. All right. Well, we got to nothing we wanted to there. A little reminiscing. But it's good to have you back in here. We haven't worked together in a long time.
I love doing this every once in a while.
I love having you every 3 years. John Skanek wraps it up next on The Fan. Big Bad John. Let's bring in Big Bad John. What are you doing?
Listening to you guys go down memory lane. That's good stuff right there.
Yeah, do you remember the old Baseball Today show?
I do, in fact. It's funny because I was listening to you guys telling that story, and that's kind of my first run-in with you before you ever were on with my brother. You know, I'd listen to the radio, and then I'd listen to their show, and then I would listen to the I was like, hey, there's a baseball show, because, you know, I'm a baseball guy.
Right.
And so I would listen to you guys sometimes, and then that's how I knew you. And, in fact, I remember the day that my brother told me that you were going to be the host with him, and I was like, who, the baseball guy? Oh, that'll be pretty interesting. And so, you know, before I had ever met you or we became friends or any of that, I just knew you as the baseball guy, and here we are all those years later.
Wow. Time flies, Jonathan. Time flies.
Yeah, I like listening to you reminisce. I feel like I should reminisce about how I got this, my job.
You should.
Filling it in. Do you remember that story?
Let me think about that. What did we do? No, I don't think I do.
So you this was like 2007 or 8. This is 2000. This is like 10 years ago. And you and my brother, the Mariners used to be on, they've been on a couple of times, but they were on the Fan at this point. And you guys, I think it was a sponsored bid, but you guys would pick the momentum builder of the game every night. You remember that?
We did it?
Yeah. You guys would do. One of you two would pick the momentum builder of the game every night.
All right.
And then as the season went on, you guys clearly stopped. It was one of the years the Mariners were horrible, and you guys stopped caring. And you would just pick the same guy every night. Do you remember who the guy was?
Don Wakamatsu.
No, it was a catcher. Jamie Burke.
Jamie Burke, yes. Of course.
And you guys every night would pick Jamie Burke. It became a running gag. And this was during the time that JR was playing Little League. It's the same league that Meatball was. And I ran into you one night at a Little League game. And I kind of got mad at you because I said, look, I care about the Mariners. And you guys are just don't care. You're just mailing it in, picking Jamie Burke every day. And I was kind of mad at you. And you gave it right back to me and said, well, nobody cares. And I said, no, I care. And you said, well, then you come on every night and pick the stupid momentum builder.
I do not remember that at all.
You don't remember that?
That's how that started?
I've got the open for the momentum builder.
All right.
Yeah. And then.
Here it is.
Yeah, go ahead. Build some momentum.
Goodbye, I remember this. We're still doing this it. We're still playing
Mariners
this during the season.
Momentum builder with Big John Sukanik.
You can't tell your sister from a fur bush without a squirt cart tonight, fellas.
Oh, that's fantastic. One of your greatest lines. One of your greatest radio lines ever.
So you told me, you said you come on then and do it every night. And I said, fine, I will. And then that was the end of that. And then my brother called me the next day and said, hey, Isaac told me that you guys kind of ran into each other at Little League Field. And are you serious? Do you want to come on every night and build momentum? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, we'll call you every night at like 6:45. You have to be ready. And then you do the momentum builder. And so I said, okay. And you guys started calling me. And I would pick momentum builders. And I did that for like 3 or 4 Mariner seasons. And then during the off season, I wouldn't come on. It would only be during the baseball season.
Right.
And it was at the end of a baseball season one year where I was doing like the last Mariner game of the year. And I was talking to you and my brother on the radio. And it was either you or Jay. I don't remember who it was. But you said, you know, hey, I don't like that we don't talk to you in the off season. So you should just come on every day and just talk about whatever. And I said, okay, well, and then one of the listeners came up with mailing it in. And they said, look, we'll just mail in the last segment, and you come on, and we'll just talk about whatever we want to talk about.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
Ever since then, we've been doing it for like 10 years.
And your commitment to this is really, it's truly inspiring. Like, I don't know anybody else who would do this.
Well, to be fair, and I've said this before, it's really rarely do I have to go out of my way. Every now and then I'm somewhere and I have to, oh, I got to go over there or make sure I can do it or whatever. But for the most part, it really is just I'm laying around doing something and you guys just call and we just talk on the phone. So, yeah. But it's been going on for like 10 years. It's kind of crazy.
Look at the traditions we've created.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Look at that.
All right.
I'd like to believe it's the highest local radio segment from 6:47 to 6:55 featuring the family member of one of the hosts.
I think it is.
I think you have that demo nailed.
You do. All right.
Yeah,
well,
we have it locked down.
You have a great Thanksgiving, okay?
You guys have a great Thanksgiving, too. I love you guys, and give my best to both your families.
All right.
You too.
Back at you. Back at Heather, too. Love her, man. His wife. She's already donated to our Special Olympics Radiothon. $250.
That's awesome.
She's the best. They're awesome. You gotta love the Sooks. Hopefully, John and Jason don't get in a fight.
No, we don't need that.
Yeah.
Because, well, Sook doesn't have the strength right now.
Yeah, Sook's sick. Hopefully he'll be back on Friday. Hey, we're going to be out at PK80 on Friday. We'll be at the Moda Center. So listen to our show, 3 to 7. If you're in the car, if you're out there, come give us a
I'm trying to see if one of the big college basketball analysts from ESPN is going to be wandering around for you.
All right. Are you on our show on Friday?
Again? No, I will. There's a good chance I'll be calling a Pilots game.
Oh, all right. Well, hey, everybody, take Uber home tonight.
Yes,
take Lyft home tonight.
Uber.
Don't drive. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you Friday at 3 on The Fan. Good night.
Friendships of Spain. Friendships of Spain.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.